flat is a state of mind. Get to know the people, science, and stories that make the Kansas outdoors more than flyover country. This is Flatlander Podcast, presented by the Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks and the Kansas Wildlife Federation. What I see on my journey is indescribable as the Bible.
All right, welcome to another episode of Flatlander. I'm one of your hosts, Laura.
And I am Nadia. Thanks for joining us today.
We are on location in Johnson County at the KDWP office in Shawnee. And today we have a special guest, Juju Wellemeyer. Welcome, Juju.
Thank you. Very excited to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. So Juju is with the K-State Research and Extension Office in Johnson County. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did.
Okay, great. So if you have not heard of the K-State Research and Extension Office, or maybe you have, but you don't know what it's all about or how it could be useful to you as an outdoors person, we are going to get all of your questions answered today. It's a great resource. We have them kind of, offices are across Kansas, right?
Yes. There's actually representation from K-State Research and Extension in all 105 counties of Kansas.
What?
Mind already blown.
Yeah. Okay. This is really exciting. So I guess, yeah, Nadia, you want to kick us off with...
Yeah, I need to know, Juju, a little bit about you first. So tell us about your background. I'm curious how you got into the career path that you're currently in.
Well, I grew up in Kansas and went to college for biology. I got my master's in biology, and then I worked for conservation departments in Kansas and Missouri throughout that process. So I have a really strong natural resources foundation. And part of K-State Research and Extension provides outreach and education in natural resources. So it was kind of just a really good fit in Johnson County. They had a position open, and that was the need they had for that position. So here I am now doing natural resources in Johnson County. And we'll get into, I think, everything that entails.
Yeah, and I want to point out that Nadia and I both met you on separate occasions, but both times we were in a stream. Right?
It's always about water.
Yeah. We were in Smoots Creek. Do you remember that?
2015 yes, I do.
Is when I met Juju in Smoots Creek. She was leading a project to survey for a species that had been petitioned to be listed on the Endangered Species Act, the Arctarter. Arkansas darter or Arkansas darter?
You know, as a Kansan, I flip back and forth on that.
Okay.
I keep it safe and just say Arctarter.
Arctarter. Okay. Yeah. And so that just tells me, so Juju was one of those smart people who in undergrad was doing a thesis, which is really impressive. I didn't do that.
Mm-hmm. Don't look at me. Yeah.
And then how did you guys met in the Nenasca?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Was, I think, the South Fork? In Nenasca?
Yes.
Yeah, and then we were goose banding another time. So we have the best outdoor adventures where our just kind of link up and then see each other, and now we're here on a podcast. So
yeah,
how cool is that?
It's pretty cool. But I think, yeah, so when did you graduate from undergrad? What year? If you don't mind my asking. I just want to know how long your career has been so far.
Well, while I was in undergrad, I was working as a fisheries assistant for Kansas.
Okay.
So, in my opinion, my career started then because I was gaining such valuable experience. I graduated my undergrad 2015.
Okay.
And then I was finished with my master's in 2017.
Okay. So you've really had like a 7-year career, and you've done all this research. And I guess what I'm getting into is I feel like it's advantageous for people like us to have experience having to comb through the scientific literature to do like a research project and have that ability to actually do research and synthesize research. And so I'm wondering if you could tell us, and I guess we haven't even really gotten into the mission of the Research and Extension Office, but I just wanted to kind of prime people to realize that's what makes you good at this job.
Yeah. Let's talk about what K-State Research and Extension is for, right?
Yeah.
K-State Research and Extension is the arm between research and the public. So our mission is to try and bridge the gap, because if you've ever read a scientific paper, you know that it's full of jargon and stats, and people have no idea what to even take away from it, because scientists love to be very wordy.
particular.
Yes. And so research and extension is trying to help disseminate that to people through education. So, yes, being able to read research, disseminate it, process it, and figure out how to tell people what it means, which I got a lot of practice doing at conferences, writing my own papers, you know, the elevator pitch, right? So when people ask me what I do now, I'm like, well, I should be good at elevator pitches, but research and extension does so much. It's very hard to say it in one sentence even.
Yeah, distill it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So research and extension, there are programs all across the country, and they are through land-grant universities. So do you want to talk about funding now? Or
yeah, let's unpack that a little bit. So land-grant university, so K-State is an example?
Yes, K-State is a land-grant university. Most states, all states have them. There's over 100 land-grant universities across North America that have research and extension as part of their mission. So this looks like a partnership between federal, state, and then local counties.
So funding, like where does funding come from? Federal, state, and local?
Yes, it's tax assistance helps fund this, but because it is a partnership between those three entities, there's a lot of different ways that these boots on the ground really get funded. So the federal level is really helping to fund some of the research. And so research happens usually at the university level. We have statewide specialists, and they try and do research to help people figure out, like, actual problems. So I've done research on endangered species, mm-hmm. which is incredible, and not to belittle that. But what K-State research, all research and extension is trying to do is do research on things that actually affect our everyday lives. Mm-hmm. So this looks like innovative farming techniques or food safe and health and safety, nutrition, horticulture, pest control, all sorts of things that affect our daily lives that we don't really think about. That is what research and extension is trying to help bridge what we don't know, what we need to know, and how to get it out to the public.
So no small task here.
No.
And no light reading either, it sounds like.
No, but luckily our specialists really do make it easier for us. So I don't need to know everything, but I do have a really good network standing behind me that I can tap into for any problem that somebody has and brings to me. So some of that funding is federally designated. There's been several acts that have gone through our government to help fund this. The main one people talk about is the Smith-Lever Act of 1914. So that kind of formalized our extension services and created that partnership between agricultural land-grant colleges and actually the United States Department of Agriculture. So a lot of our top regulations and funding and some of our guidance comes from USDA. And we also have a part of our directive, part of how we're structured came also from the 2008 Farm Bill. And so that created, it put in charge the National Institute of Food and Agriculture in charge of extension services. So those are kind of, along with the Hatch Act and Morrill Acts, those are things that have kind of helped create what extension is today.
Okay. I'm really interested. So Farm Bill. So here's another conservation area that's like sort of plugged into the Farm Bill.
Yes. Yeah. It really was trying to get extension to focus on finding those solutions to issues of agriculture, food, environment, and communities. So that's the other thing. It's not just about farming and ag. Mm-hmm. It's also about community health.
That's amazing. So, I mean, it's so amazing that you're not technically in a conservation organization per se, but yet you have all of the elements there. And there's that huge element of collaboration. I mean, we don't get anything good done without the help of others, and this seems to be evidence of that.
Oh, yeah. Most extension offices are really good at partnering. I partner with KDWP to put on education programs. We also partner with the NRCS and the conservation districts. You know, you can't do everything on your own. I don't have the capacity. So I work in Johnson County. There are over 609,000 residents in that county alone. But because we are part of the Kansas City Metro, I am often trying to provide resources to, you know, a population of over 2 million people. So that's unique to my office. And I can't do that alone. No one in my office can do that alone. Even the offices spread around Kansas are trying to serve large areas, large populations, and a diversity of issues. So this is one reason why we utilize volunteers. The program that volunteers with me is called the Extension Master Naturalist. But in our office, you know, we have over 1,200 volunteers.
Wow.
They're part of the Master Gardeners, which many people are familiar with. We also have the Master Food Volunteers. So they cover topics that relate to food, health, and safety, and nutrition. And then we also have VITA tax volunteers that help people prepare taxes, as well as just general volunteers around our office and 4-H volunteers. So the other part of Extension is youth development, and 4-H, that whole program is housed within Research and Extension.
I just want to make sure that I heard that right. 1,200 volunteers?
Yeah.
For this county.
For this county. Alone. Yeah.
Like, I'm lucky to get 12 volunteers for something. So that's pretty darn impressive.
It is impressive. If you're not good at volunteer management, then these positions can be pretty difficult. But they expand my capacity, you know, tenfold.
Oh, absolutely.
It's amazing. They're amazing.
So you said there's a research and extension presence across every single county in Kansas. I'm assuming not every county has as robust of a program as Johnson County. Is that accurate? Or are there actual like brick and mortar locations in every county?
There are brick and mortar locations in every county or district. Okay. So some counties have banded together to create a district. They usually do have a satellite location in each county, but so yes, there is resources for every county and every person in our state.
So it sounds like it's kind of a twofold approach where K-State Research and Extension, it has a lot of outreach efforts, but then there's these brick and mortar locations for like walk-in traffic and provides opportunities for the public to seek assistance as well and kind of drive that. Okay, let's say, what would I walk into a K-State Research and Extension office for? Like, what would you be able to assist me with?
Yeah, that's a great question. So generally, we get a lot of walk-ins. Because we have so many volunteers, our county actually has a gardening hotline.
What? Is it 24 hours?
It is not 24 hours. But people can either call, email, or walk in with their horticulture issues. So they diagnose plant and pest problems. Also, most K-State Research and Extension counties will assist people with their soil testing. So this is an incredible program because it allows you to know if you actually need to put fertilizer down on your lawn, garden, or crop fields. Wow. So this is one of the ways that we help to try and create healthy environments. So we get a lot of soil samples. People can buy radon testing kits in our office. People can get their pressure canners tested for safety at our office.
Whoa.
Where I come in is people can bring in pond plants and I will help identify them, or insects and I help identify them, or I get a lot of photos of scat. Luckily, no scat has showed up on my desk yet. I am waiting for that day. It will happen. It I know will it will. It will.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I hope it does. Yeah.
I wish that for you.
I'm not sure I hope, but yeah, there's often jars of green algae scum. And this is where email is amazing and texting is amazing. Someone calls me with an issue and I'm like, yeah, we can help you with this. But first, send me some photos because that'll get us on the right track.
And it's free.
It's free.
And so going back to that research piece and just all of your experience getting into the scientific literature and synthesizing it, if I have a pond and I call you and say, I've got this algae, whatever, can I assume you're going to come back at me with the best available science?
Yes. So that is the crux of this, right? If someone comes and they have some pest in their house, I'm not going to tell them the old wives' tale remedy, you know, of throw salt over your shoulder or, you know, something that's just kind of out there that you see on the internet, you know, like we're not going to usually recommend that you spray some repellent because the research doesn't show that those are effective. So what we do is we comb through our research and resources to make sure that we're telling people the effective methods to deal with their issues. So I'm not going to, you know, it's a balance, especially when people are trying to be natural and organic. But sometimes there is a time and place for an herbicide or a pesticide. And so it's not our job to sell stuff. We're not trying to sell companies. We're not giving out recommendations for products. What we are doing is we're selling education for free. Yeah.
It's a bargain.
It is a bargain. So I'm just here to give the education and all the options that are viable, and then someone else can decide what to do with that.
And like you were saying earlier, so if someone comes at you with a question, but you personally do not know the answer, you have this vast network through the extension offices and the researchers to get them the best answer.
Exactly right.
It's incredible.
And it's not just the K-State network that I have behind me. It's also all extension networks across the country.
What? Mind blown again.
I'm going to need a moment.
Like, yeah. For those who aren't in the room, Laura and I have been giving each other eyes because we're like, we are utilizing this resource, especially when it comes to gardening.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and pond management, because I cannot tell you how many times I've heard bad things or wrong things, old wives' tales or old husbands' tales of how to manage a pond. And it's hard to say, like, no, you don't need to shoot all the snapping turtles.
Right.
They can be beneficial, right?
Yes. Yes. It's hard because people come in with some ingrained preconceived notions from what you've grown up hearing. And we're not trying to change anybody's minds. We're just trying to give them the best resources.
Beautiful. So let's talk about this a little bit more. Tell me what you mentioned, master gardeners, master naturalists. What does it mean to be a master? And like, what's the benefit of that?
So these are volunteer groups that are nonprofit. They are extensively trained. So they go through almost 40 hours of training in their first, you could almost classify it as a semester. And then every year after that, they have to provide, for us, it's 30 hours of volunteer service each year. And on top of that, we want them to do an additional 10 hours of advanced training. So this way they stay educated, they stay on top of whatever research is coming out. And so they're highly educated volunteers. This doesn't mean that they are formally educated in horticulture or natural resources. Some of them are because that's their passion. But this means that these people are passionate about gardening or nature. And so they've connected with these volunteer groups to do service projects around our communities and to also help us with our expanding our capacity to do outreach and education.
So what might a master naturalist have expertise in from doing all of this training?
Our master naturalists here are pretty well trained in prairie ecosystems because we have a few projects that they can volunteer on for that. We also have a very robust citizen science bluebird monitoring program. So that one is really great because not only do our volunteers help monitor I think, over 40 bluebird nest boxes around our county. They also train other volunteers in different cities to do their own monitoring. So they're kind of passing on their knowledge to create better informed citizens. Our volunteers are also well-trained in just the general plant ecosystems in our area. We have quite a few people who love to go try and eradicate bush honeysuckle. So that, yeah, I know.
Is that the one that smells good?
It kind of smells good, but once you learn to identify it, you will see it everywhere.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so people love to go rip that out.
Stress relief.
Yeah.
I think that is why they like that, actually. Yes.
On the next episode, we'll delve into that and find out.
Nature therapy.
Yeah.
We've also got people that are really into doing the education piece. So we have a lot of generalists that can go out and teach kids about insects, trees, plants, mammals, and also just we try and instill in the younger generation curiosity and just how to go out in nature and observe things. We've been putting on some junior master naturalist programs here in Johnson County. And so that's really great to see how excited these kids are for nature. Other areas of expertise include native plants. So we have a demonstration garden. It has a quite a long history that I'll just skim over, but it was a Superfund site. It's called the Pollinator Prairie. It's in Olathe. And it's been reclaimed by the community, and the naturalists help to maintain the native plants there. So this is a great opportunity for people to come out, walk through these native plant beds, and kind of see how they could translate native planting into their own yards at home.
I'm kind of wishing we would have went there today to record this.
Yeah, no. I'm wishing that too. And just so listeners know, she said Superfund, not super fun.
But it, correct. But it is both.
But now it is fun.
Now it is fun.
Okay. It's both.
Yes. So it's a site that had a lot of pollution, and several people were charged with cleaning it up. And so those companies pooled resources. And so that's why it's super funded. But now it's all maintained and cleaned up and has been given back to that community.
I'm so glad you mentioned the junior master naturalists. Say that five times fast. because I've been thinking this whole time, I wonder who the ideal person is to want to be a master naturalist, or who would be ideal. So tell us a little bit about like age and who the typical individual is that kind of signs up to do that.
For master naturalists, you have to be 18. And I do have quite a range as far as ages go in my volunteer program, because we try and do make sure that a working person would be able to attend the meetings and projects. So we offer a lot of our opportunities outside of 9 to 5. Other programs tend to be more of an older demographic, because once your career has kind of slowed down, you finally have time to mm-hmm. devote, you know, over 30 hours of volunteer service to your community. Our junior master naturalists, that's a program where third through fifth graders come and get to learn about nature. But it takes all kinds of people, you know, to be a volunteer in an organization like this, because we need people that are good at organizing. We need people that are good at leadership. We need people that like teaching children. And let me tell you, that is not everyone. And that's okay. But I have people that look at me and say, do not put me with kids. They don't want to. That's fine.
I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not everyone's cup of nature, and it's okay. So we have a lot of people that are really into birding, but they do try and diversify and try different projects, because that's what makes volunteering fun, and that's what makes giving back to their community fun, is all the diversity of things that they can go and do.
Yeah, this is great. What a great way to foster a sense of community. Can you touch on, so, you know, we're still in the middle of this pandemic. How has the programming at Research and Extension sort of changed to meet the moment?
We were lucky during the pandemic because so many of our projects are outside, and that was like the one safe place to be during the pandemic where you didn't have a lot of restrictions on groups gathering. So our naturalists were able to still go out and maintain gardens and safely distance or check bluebird boxes and safely distance. But it has caused us in the extension office to really get stretched and have to grow to provide our programs via Zoom or to try out the hybrid method, which is so difficult to try and provide a quality online experience while also putting on an in-person experience. It happened. One of the best parts to come out of the Johnson County Extension Office during the pandemic was a program called Silver Clovers. So it's kind of a play because 4-H is all about the green clover, and there's, you know, a program for kids before they're old enough to be in 4-H, you know, clover buds. And so then we, our office developed Silver Clovers, which was programming for people that were 50 or older that were very isolated during the pandemic. Mm. So the purpose of that program was to try and provide ways for them to connect and feel connected, even during a time when everyone was so isolated. My program area put on several birding classes via Zoom, and they got like fun giveaways. And this just created a nice sense of community among that demographic.
While still achieving your guys' mission.
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. And we still did some this spring. I think I had over 200 people register for a class about beginning birding.
Very cool. So obviously at Wildlife and Parks, you know, our bread and butter constituents are hunters and anglers. And so for those folks who are listening in on this, let's talk a little bit about what hunters, anglers, outdoor enthusiasts, maybe who want to take it one step further than just bird watching, how might they engage with K-State Research and Extension?
Yeah, that's a good question. We provide a lot of resources for pond owners, like we've talked about. So this could look like a homeowners association needing help with their pond management, but this also looks like people who want to have more robust fish populations, who are trying to figure out why the ecosystem in their pond isn't functioning how they would like it to. So we provide a lot of resources on providing good angling for pond owners. We also provide resources on pasture management. So people that are trying to do wildlife habitat can come and gain resources on what weeds are in their pasture, what plants they would like to achieve in their pasture, what would be good wildlife habitat. We do have some statewide specialists that are really good at helping with creating food plots, making sure your timber stand is what you want it to be. So there's a lot of different options that outdoor recreational people can use us for.
And literally all they have to do is send you an email.
Send us an email, call us on the phone, come into the office, look at the website. Yeah, Facebook. A lot of offices have presence on Facebook now. There's a lot of different ways to use our resources. A lot of our specialists at the state level actually produce their own podcasts. So there's some podcasts on weeds. Yep. I think that one is more directed for agricultural weeds, but the master gardeners and the horticulturalists in the different offices also help people with weed identification and control. I know there's also podcasts on different livestock, all sorts of things.
I'm glad Laura's writing this down because I'm like, I see a collaboration here in the future.
Yeah, well, and I'm also writing it down. So last night after work, I spent about an hour doing musk thistle control.
Naturally.
In my neighborhood. Yeah. It's just what I do for fun.
Yeah.
Typical Wednesday night.
Yeah, and I just like Googled it and found some weird resources, but I'm thinking, why didn't I call my extension office to get the actual best science approach to doing this? I'm gonna call them on my way home.
You should call them. You also could join the cons of Master Naturalists out. I know you're in that neck of the woods. There are three chapters of Master Naturalists in Kansas. One in Johnson County, obviously. Riley County has the Konza chapter, and then Reno County has a chapter down in Hutchinson. But if you're listening to this and not in Kansas, almost every state has Master Naturalist programs. And these are often a partnership between the state conservation and extension. So on the Missouri side, I know they partner really closely with Missouri Department of Conservation.
Very nice.
So Juju, we've talked an awful lot about your organization and what they offer. Let's talk about you a little bit. So what would you say is the most exciting part of your job?
Many extension agents talk about how the best part of working for extension is that you never know what is going to come up that day. So you could be recording a podcast, or you could be identifying bat scat via photo. I could get asked to go help someone with some pond management or pasture management or putting on programs. So it's just really a variety. And in our office, we work really closely together. So sometimes you're pitching in to help somebody put on a 4-H thing, to do a food fair. I actually did teach an advanced training for our master food volunteers on making sourdough bread.
This is important, though, like especially during the pandemic. I'm not joking. I saw so many articles about now is the time to learn to make bread.
For sure. And it's delicious. Nothing beats homemade bread.
But and it's utilizing wheat from Kansas, potentially.
That is true. I do buy some flour that's local, so you can find it. It's just such a variety at the extension office. People walking in with soil tests or vegetation samples that they want to know what's going on with whatever issue they have, a tree that's dying, insects eating something. Unfortunately, a lot of people use my expertise to see if they have bed bugs in their home.
Oh, no.
But a lot of people, don't trust what a professional might tell them because a professional is, trying to sell a product ultimately. And so they come to me and they're like, how do I know if that's what I actually have? Or are these ants or are these termites? And for me, that's a quick glance. But for them, it can mean the difference between thousands of dollars.
Yeah. That's amazing.
You have an important role. What can you provide us with an example? I'm like really curious about what kind of questions you're getting.
I thought you were going to say bed bugs, so I'm glad it didn't go there.
No, I feel itchy just thinking about that. No, but I'm curious, like, what is the most common question you get? What's the wildest question? What questions have stumped you?
It's very cyclical. So right now we are in tick season. I've identified three different ticks this week. I'm sure if I were at the office, it would be four. It's been one a day right now. So we're in tick season, disseminating a lot of information about ticks and what to do if you get one, which for everyone listening, is monitor for symptoms. The CDC does not recommend testing them because that can be a faulty conclusion. So just monitor for symptoms and remove it promptly.
Wait, the CDC doesn't recommend testing the actual tick.
Correct. Okay. Yep. I also have some people that are dealing with urban foxes that are living under their porch. So I'm connected with our state wildlife specialist, and we're trying to come up with the best solution for them to get those to move somewhere else. This week, I did have a couple bed bug questions, unfortunately. Several pond questions. Pond questions pretty much go from early spring until late in the fall. We have a lot of people that, have blue-green algae, and a lot of aquatic vegetation that they're trying to manage. Something that stumped me. Well, I'm not an expert in everything. So the thing that I most recently had to activate the network to get some advice on is someone wants to put some beehives in between some row crop fields in a little tree row. And so they wanted to know if GMO corn that is has been bred to kill certain worms that attack the corn, if that would be detrimental to their beehives. And they also wanted to know, you know, how close can you put beehives to a crop field?
Sure.
So I'm not a bee expert, but I know several bee experts at this point. And so I reached out to them to get the answer so that I could help that person make an informed decision for their beehives.
Absolutely.
Wow, this is an incredible resource. And again, it's free. I mean, it's tax funded, and you talked about some other funding sources, but the person asking the bee question isn't like required to send you a check for the answer.
Yeah.
No. Nope.
It's like having a free consultant in the back of your pocket.
Yeah. An objective consultant.
Yeah. It's a good first stop for a lot of things. And unfortunately, I don't think enough people know that they have these resources available to them. I do often recommend people reach out to their most local agent to get started there, and then they can connect them with the broader resources if necessary.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm still kind of curious. Let's go back to the scat. I want to know, what kind of scat are you being asked to identify mostly? Is it raccoons?
It's surprisingly not raccoons. I do get some raccoon scat questions. And also, you all understand being in natural resources. This doesn't just end when I leave the office, right? I am my friend's personal extension agent. And so they'll be in Florida and being like, what is this thing? And I'm like, well, here's your local extension office number. But I'll tell you what it is anyways. My brother just bought a new house, and I did a quick lap around the yard, and we were inside, and he's like, I need you to come investigate something. And I was like, oh, you mean the cat scat in the window well? And he's like, how did you know? And I was like, because I saw it, and I already looked at it. And I was like, yeah, that's just a cat, not a raccoon. You don't have to worry.
You're fine. You're cleared.
But the main one actually is bat.
Really?
Yeah.
Johnson County.
Oh, yes.
So tell us where these bats are residing that people are encountering the scat.
So a lot of times bats will roost during the day or night in a covered porch under a shingle. And so people see these little piles of scat collecting every night, and there's no animal around. It's mysterious, right? They clean it off, and then the next day it's there again. And so I have them send me pictures, and I'm like, okay, the best way to discourage a bat from hanging out in that spot is to just leave your light on.
Oh,
who would have thought?
My mind is blown for the third time.
Yeah. And this is like one of your murder mystery podcasts, because like you get all the clues,
the mystery
the
of
evidence.
It all.
Yeah. And then you have to.
Yeah, that might be the most fun part is
being a detective.
Being a nature detective.
That's really cool. And I liked how you said activate the network.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds really fancy.
Instead of neighborhood watch, it's nature watch.
Yeah.
We just came up with something, didn't we?
This
is going
to
happen.
And if you want to start a podcast and take that name, go for it.
You got it.
Nature Watch.
Ooh. Yeah.
Activate. Listeners, activate.
Yeah. The one thing I would say is if you are reaching out to an extension agent, they do try and get back to you very quickly, but very busy people. So
that
I will probably.
Sense. Yeah. With the wide variety of experts that you have in the areas that you cover. I mean, this is kind of amazing, actually.
Yeah, it really is. I want to circle back to the pond question because I do need an answer on the snapping turtles.
Oh, okay.
They're good for ponds, right?
Yeah. Okay. Healthy ecosystem. Plants are good for ponds. Plants grow fat fish. That is the thing that people often forget. Unfortunately, a lot of our systems have excess nutrients, so you're going to have a lot of plants. But there are different ways that you can implement some strategies to try and reduce how many nutrients are available in your pond for all of those plants and algae to kind of get out of control. But turtles are one piece of that ecosystem that's beneficial. Turtles aren't voracious eaters. They're not going to just go after all your fish and chomp them up.
So they're not water goats.
Is that what people call them?
No, I just came up with that.
I have not heard them called water goats.
Well,
but,
there's another golden nugget for you.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Full of them. The next time I did just identify a snapping turtle for somebody, and so I now wish I'd told him it was a water goat.
You got a water goat.
You have a water goat. But yeah, turtles are just one little link in a healthy ecosystem, and also, how on earth would you ever keep them from living in your pond?
I know people who have tried.
We're not going to name names.
We won't name names. I hope they listen to this episode or reach out to you. So given all these questions that are coming at you from email, phone call, maybe even a text, what keeps you up at night? What stresses you out?
The sheer amount that we're trying to accomplish in our office is pretty daunting at times. But I don't feel super stressed out about what I'm accomplishing because I have almost 200 master naturalists that I can send out in my stead to help put on some education programs. That frees up my time to, you know, help someone with their crops or livestock or pasture or food plot. You know, I've been sleeping pretty good lately, Laura. I'm not going to lie.
Hey. Well, I mean, you've got an army of volunteers. You've got this huge network. You've got this clear, wonderful, inspiring mission. I just wonder, do you feel like you guys are making a difference? Does it feel like there's been progress? Are people becoming more educated?
That's very hard to measure, right? I know that they track how many questions come into the gardening hotline, and so if you have more questions, is that because there's more awareness about your program? If you have less questions, is that because you've already done so much education over time? Is that because people are listening to the gardening hour over their lunch and using these Zooms to get their questions answered so they don't need to use the gardening hotline as much? I do feel like I make a small difference on a local scale because, you know, even just unfortunately telling someone that's a termite, you know, then they can turn around and make an informed decision. Or telling someone, you know, that's just a carpet beetle. That's not what a bed bug looks like. Then that gives them a great peace of mind that they can turn around and then, you know, take care of their pest problem a different way. Helping people with their ponds, I feel like I do a lot of education. We had 50 people at a pond class this spring, and we talked about how to, not which chemicals to put on their plants, which is one method, and it does have a place, but that's a Band-Aid. And so I'm trying to educate people on how to take care of their ponds so they need less Band-Aids. And that hopefully will improve our waterways and our systems across our county. Sometimes I get people from out of county at my programs. So, you know, our reach is really across the whole network. So, yeah, I do feel like we're making a positive impact, even if it's tax assistance for people that can't afford someone to prepare their taxes, or budgeting assistance for people that don't know how to make a budget. Soil tests so people can save money on fertilizer and they're not just washing it into the drains. We have a Healthy Yards, Healthy Ecosystems program to try and help people know how they can implement things in their own lawn that will have a broader effect. We do native plant education so people can put plants in that require less fertilizer, less water, stabilize their ground, and provide pollinator habitat. So for all the different programs that we're doing, all of it makes such a good impact. And I think that's why people love working for Extension. And that's why I want everyone to know about all these resources that are available. For hunters, anglers, landowners, gardeners, even people that you know, there's a lot of canning resources. So that might be something you would be interested in, Laura, with, with your gardening and harvesting. And then what's the safest way to can? Because unfortunately, it's not always your grandma's recipe. So they, you know, they're using that fact-based information to give people resources to keep them safe.
That's awesome. So going back to the importance of these volunteers, can you tell our listeners, if they're interested in serving as a volunteer, what that process looks like?
They should get online and look up and see what their local office has to offer. They may have, a lot of places have master gardeners, so you can get online, see when the application period would be, and apply for that. Master naturalists don't have quite as many chapters across our state, and unfortunately, I would have to look up how many master food volunteer chapters we have here in Kansas.
So if they go to the main website, is that information available? Is there a main website?
There is a main K-State Research and Extension website, and I know that they do have information about the volunteer programs on there.
Perfect. So would a potential volunteer contact the chapter that's most closely related to the program they want to get into, or is it all facilitated directly through K-State Research and Extension?
Most of it is facilitated through the county offices or, okay, or districts. So they would want to contact the most local office near them and see if they can accommodate their request for whatever volunteer program they would like to be involved with. To that effect, you know, if there's not a Master Naturalist group near you, you might contact your office and let them know that that's something you would like.
Yeah.
Also, if your office doesn't have a program that you would really like, I always encourage public feedback. Half of the programs I've put on have been based off of people being like, oh, I'd really like a program about this topic or that topic. And so I use that to inform, you know, what kind of education are people really needing that would be timely and pertinent. Mm-hmm. So feedback to your local extension agent is probably always welcome. At least it is for me. So I'm just going to assume they're similar. But once you find out the program you would like to be involved with, there's an application and a training period, and then you get to go forth and volunteer.
And I assume there's no costs with the volunteer program either.
There is an application fee for most of the There is an application fee for most of the programs, and that just kind of helps to cover the onboarding, name tags, materials, binders, and then some places might have a scholarship. So my office does have a few scholarships for our Master Naturalists. And so if that's something that would stand in your way, I would encourage somebody to reach out to the agent and see if there are resources.
So at Flatlander, we are a very goals-oriented group, and we like to challenge our listeners. So I want to end on, what would you pose as a challenge to our listeners, given everything we've just discussed?
My challenge would be to, A, see where your local extension office is. That would be step one. Step two, see if they have anything for you that you're interested in. Whether it's, you know, better environmental practices, how to grow bigger deer, how to
control musk thistle.
Exactly. How to control musk thistle. Yes. Whatever it may be, canning tips, budgeting tips. There are programs for healthy aging. I mean, I haven't even listed all the programs yet, you guys. I'm not going to lie. There's so many.
It's a two-parter.
Yeah, seriously, and it's cutting edge. You guys are on the front lines. You have all the best science. This is fantastic. What a resource for our state.
Go look up your local office and find out what they have for you.
Yeah, double dog dare straight from Juju.
I'm doing it this afternoon. Juju, thank you so much for coming on. This has been really inspiring.
Thank you for having me. I'm so glad to get to talk about all this, even the scat.
Oh, always. We're always down to talk scat.
Scat doesn't scare us. That's our t-shirt.
Yeah.
That's a good t-shirt. Can I have one?
Yes.
Listeners, thank you so much for joining in. We hope you enjoyed this episode. For more information about these programs, be sure to reach out, go online and look up K-State Research and Extension. And remember, flat is a state of mind.
Flatlander Podcast is made possible through a partnership between the Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks and the Kansas Wildlife Federation. Sound and production by Megan Mayhew. Music by Kansas locals, The Box Turtles. Become a member of KWF for free by visiting kansaswildlifefederation.org. And be sure to follow KWF on Facebook at Kansas Wildlife Federation and on Instagram at KS Wildlife Fed. Stay up to date on all things KDWP by following the department on Facebook at Kansas Wildlife and Parks and on Instagram at the KDWP. Remember, the Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks is supported by flatlanders like you through the sale of licenses and permits. Consider buying a hunting or fishing license today to conserve and protect the wild spaces and faces that make Kansas more than flyover country.